listeners and viewers. Welcome to another show with Ron Stefanski, your host at Disrupt Ed, where we talk to the seemingly ordinary people who are quite extraordinary in changing the landscape of our fair city, Detroit, of our region in Michigan, and across the globe. And I always am fascinated to geek out with technologists, people who really understand the tech, because I have a major case of FOMO. I'm always worried about being left behind with technology accelerating the pace of our work life and our home life by leaps and bounds, and at a speed and scale at which we've never seen before. So today, long time coming, we have Doug Song with us today. Doug is an amazing guest, and I'm so happy to have him here today. Doug, as you may know, was the founder of Duo Security and is now running his family foundation and doing a whole lot of stuff in the city of Detroit. Doug, welcome to Disrupt Ed.
Thank you, Ron. And actually, just a quick point. I don't run our foundation. I actually, the way I tell my executive director for our foundation, Clea Burgaston, I work for her.
But you're doing so much with it. And I want to start out by giving our listeners and viewers an opportunity to hear a little bit about your origin story and how you got to this point, because it's been a pretty amazing ride, I would have to say, watching you from the sidelines moving at a breakneck pace.
Yeah, well, long story short, I'm not a native Michigander. I was born in D.C., grew up in Baltimore. And so more of an East Coaster, but my dad had a liquor store in Baltimore, and I grew up skateboarding, mostly in the streets. And so that was sort of my upbringing. I found my way to technology because of my dad's liquor store. He had one of the few retail kind of operations powered by a computer back in the day. Early adopter of technology. He had all kinds of gadgets in the house, but also had a computer in the store. And when I was 8, I was doing data entry for him, basically keeping track of all of our inventory, trying to figure out how to deal with POs and all the accounts receivable. So anyway, I had an early education in sort of what the entrepreneurship looked like at a pretty low level, but also what technology could do to help with that in West Baltimore.
Helping small businesses. So then you came to the University of Michigan, right? And that's where you first became a Michigander.
Yeah, came to Michigan in 93. Had no idea. I couldn't even place Michigan on a map at the time. I think I'd only applied because most of my friends had all gone to college locally on the East Coast or Maryland. But I had a buddy who went to school in Michigan the year ahead of me. And he wrote back saying, "Hey, you got to check this out. It's really awesome, and it's a cheap application." And totally shifted. I mean, totally changed my life. I think I was destined otherwise for a small liberal arts college somewhere in New England studying philosophy. And thank God I didn't do that.
Well, in studying technology, you really became a master at it as a hacker. And if I have the story correct, you were working on the inside of the University of Michigan operating system. Is that right?
Yeah, that was sort of, yeah. I came about it in a funny way. I've not only been computing since I was 8, but I was hacking since I was very young, too. Hacking, by hacking, I mean using technology for things that wasn't originally designed for, or gaining access to systems that, again, you weren't supposed to necessarily have. But in those days, there wasn't really a culture and community of open source the way there is today, where you don't have to do all that. You don't have to break into systems. You don't have to sort of to get access to various operating systems and all this. Now they're just available to you largely, and more of the world has started to standardize actually on Linux and all the open source technologies. Basically the hippies won. Open source is kind of all the technologists sharing kind of all their technology and tooling in a public commons, and it's funny, but back in those days,
it wasn't really happening, right?
Yeah,
that wasn't really happening.
It wasn't really happening, but also it's just sort of exploration. The same way you sort of like skate around in the city you know, hitting up a bunch of plazas or, I mean, just kids run amok in the city. If the city doesn't have a skate park, the city is a skate park. And so that was basically my life, getting kicked out of places or chased by cops. But, you know, when I was hacking, it was sort of the same thing. it was not as a physical sort of an intrusion. It was sort of a, but, you know, back in those days, there weren't really laws about this stuff, frankly. And anyway, so long story short, I got caught hacking when I was in my freshman year. I also lost my father when I was 18. He was carjacked and all this. And so, I probably wasn't thinking very clearly about what my next move would be when we were down to one income family and trying to pay for college. So thankfully, I had folks who took pity on me. Actually, the folks who I attacked took pity on me and basically gave me a job. I would say gave me a job, but, you know, they took me under wing and basically said, look, let's not throw the book at this kid. Let's try to have him help protect us against kids like him. And so I ended up working for the university for 4 years under academic probation. Building a bunch of security systems for the University of Michigan.
Ultimately, though, that led to your rise of creating several companies. Your first internet company was launched. And tell me a little bit about that.
I'm an accidental entrepreneur. I didn't really ever intend to go and build companies, but sort of fell into it. Because of the university experience, I had weirdly some pretty rare experience protecting large organizations, right? And university is big. University, like University of Michigan, is basically a city unto itself. Everything from nuclear facilities to hotel facilities to sport arenas, stadiums, and all this. It's a minor sort of city unto itself. So you get a lot of experience sort of seeing a lot of things there, but and of course, dealing with the student body and larger faculty and staff that, 45,000 folks to protect, it gave me some interesting experience, a great training ground, proving ground for coming up on enterprise technology and so forth. And so, I ended up consulting. I joined a security consulting firm called Anzen out of Ann Arbor. And, our first customers were, interesting enough, banks, casinos, casino operators. I remember
because that needed to protect their assets and risk management in the world of cyber.
Yeah, and in those days, it's funny, sort of funny, but I didn't realize quite how similar the banks and casinos were in terms of some of this stuff. But it was fun. Those are the early days of what now is called ethical hacking. But actually, assessing the security of these organizations. So getting paid to this stuff I was doing as a kid. By the organizations that, otherwise would be targets for me when I were my customers. So it was really an interesting experience, formative one for me, but also realizing just how much of the world there was out there that was increasingly vulnerable, right, to the digital attack. And so at any rate, we built this company up, ended up building product. I met my wife shortly after college, and we met at a Chinese bakery where I was a line cook. She was working in the front, and we both ended up working for this company where she had basically tripled sales, right? I built this product to protect, basically to detect attackers. She ended up tripling sales for the organization, and we never looked back. We ended up just going to be a product company, sold that product, and then I realized quickly that, bits scale much faster, but much better than hours, right? If you're a consultant, there's only so much of your time you can really...
it's not eminently scalable to do consulting, right?
Right. But if you build a product, and it's if it's digital, it costs you nothing to replicate. And so your marginal cost of, sort of scaling is just very low, right? In terms of you sell the same bits over and over and over again to as many customers out there who need it. And we never looked back after that. I swore off consulting. I said, but I always, that was an important experience for me because I always felt being alongside customers in that way, where you're not the rock star, you're the roadie. you're helping them protect.
You're helping them to have a good show, right?
Yeah,
that's a great way to describe it.
Yeah, you're not the astronauts. You're mission control, you know. But you're backing these folks, building kind of their businesses and organizations. And I think there's something very noble in the mission of serving in that way. And so, I came to really enjoy that experience, and that never really left me, even as we were building more and more products.
Your products went on to found the formation of Duo Security, which is the first Michigan unicorn. When you sold it to Cisco in 2018, is that right? I think I had that right.
Yeah, but technically we're a unicorn, although we were pretty shy about that ever embracing that term when we got funded. Back in the earlier days of all this, you know, when we got a slug of funding that valued us post money at over $1 billion. You know, there's a whole article about TechCrunch about us joining the Unicorn Club, which at the time was roughly about 100 companies in the world. And now it's kind of wild, right? There's got thousands, but and many of them actually, I don't think, I say they're deeply overvalued and now in trouble. But those days, you know, it's sort of a rare thing to get to that point. But I never liked that moniker because it doesn't really matter. You know, it's sort of like, you know, sort of how other people sort of value a company as investors is not the same as what value you're providing to your, or as investors, yes, to your customers, right, to the world at large.
You know, that kind of brings me back to our luncheon last year at the Detroit Yacht Club, where we were talking, and one of the profound takeaways for me from our first major conversation was your vision that technology could help businesses solve problems, so protect their assets, risk in the cyber world. But also, the thing that really fascinated me about that conversation, and I've hewed back to it many times, is your view that technology can really lift the middle class, that can really, you know, that people getting in technology can find a very exciting role for themselves. But it's also one of the fastest tracks to getting in the middle class. You can start out making no money, demonstrate your value, and very quickly accelerate into a job or into a role that is very powerful.
I think technology these days is sort of, I don't know, it's pigeonholed, right? It's something that's sort of, you know, strictly even digital and strictly sort of software or all these kind of things. I mean, for a long time during since the era of the first dot-com bubble and the rise of what was maybe considered easy money, you know, and all this, you know, it was sort of associated with all that. But really, I mean, I think of this, you know, sort of philosophy side of me, philosophical side of me, think about this broadly. I think technology is the only thing that's driven human progress. I think at the end of the day, technology is just how to do things, right? Better processes, better systems, better tooling. But just how you do things, because at the end of the day, you know, we don't cut each other's hair any faster. We don't wash the laundry any faster, you know, without, you know, some sort of technology. And in fact, you know, like the whole history of Michigan and thereby the history of the American middle class, because we built the American middle class for Michigan. And, you know, going way back to the days of the fur, you know, ice industry, you know, traders, trappers, all this stuff. I mean, you know, Michigan has this history of certainly being part of it was the extraction and, you know, production industries. You know, we used to cut blocks of ice out of the Great Lakes, put them in sawdust covered, you know, train cars and send them to New York right before commercial refrigeration. We, you know, the British and the French, right, battled over who got to skin all those beavers and those pelts and stuff and take the land from our Native Americans. But I think at the end of the day, you know, it was actually the industrial, you know, production that really set the course for what would be, again, the scaling, right, of industry beyond the limits of individual sort of human capability. And so, you know, like we talked about the auto industry, but the auto industry wouldn't have happened without Michigan being the birthplace of the stove industry, Like we built all the stoves in the world, right? And
A lot of people don't know that we were the stove capital of the world prior to being the manufacturer, you know, the automotive capital of the world.
Yeah,
and absolutely.
And what was the core technology there that parlayed into kind of industrial production around autos? Metalworking, right? Without stoves, right, and all that, we wouldn't have all the, you know, it was originally blacksmiths, but then all kinds of metalworking, right? That in all the technologies that became out of that, from stamping to bending, all this stuff. But all these things, you know, like from ice, stoves, cereal, right? Manufactured food, right? We figured out how to package food, put it in boxes, and give it a shelf life, right? You know? And that wasn't Detroit. That was, you know, that was more obviously Battle Creek and Post and Kellogg and all these folks. But then, you know, production of furniture, you know, Furniture City USA or in the West Side, mid-century modern. And then all the other innovations that came with all this from a social technology perspective, like, you know, the unions, right? The birth of the American labor movement, the anti-war movement, you know, anti-war movement could have created all the, not just economic wealth, but all the cultural wealth, right? Of punk rock and, you know, protest kind of era music, and you know, Motown was part of that. Even pizza, you know, here, you know, people talk about, you know, Detroit as like cars and pizza, and pizza is also technology. I mean, if you think about it, Little Caesars was the Ford of pizza, right? It's apocryphal, but, you know, Mike Ilitch supposedly invented the conveyor belt oven, right? Without that, how would you be producing as much pizza
right,
in volume as they do? Domino's.
Domino's.
FedEx of pizza, right? And if you think about, you know, the rise of Domino's, I mean, the 10 years or 7 years anyway, that was 8 years. I was CEO of the Duo before Zisco. Patrick Doyle, right in Ann Arbor, was the CEO of Domino's. And during his tenure, his stock outperformed every tech stock. If you had invested in Domino's, you would have beat Google, Apple, Amazon, and Microsoft in terms of stock performance. People don't realize that.
No, they don't. It's a sort of the hidden engine. Technology is the hidden engine of both innovation and advanced, you know, processes that allowed Domino's to just absolutely dominate, right?
Yeah, but all these things, and you think about it, you know, there's a sort of this popular history of Michigan that, you know, we all understand is the products, particularly consumer products that we all enjoy. But there's a secret history of Michigan dating back to the 40s and 50s of the military computing, tanks, aerospace, chemical engineering, time-shared computing, remote sensing, complex systems. I mean, all this stuff came out of the post-war era, right? Where, you know, we talk about the arsenal of democracy. What was that, right? How did we win the war? It was when, you know, GM and, you know, the big three were called upon to serve, right? In the effort, when the Germans kind of rolled out their first Panzer tanks and we're like, oh, crap, you know, this is bad.
This is not good, right?
How fast can we, you know, build military vehicles? You know, Detroit came to the call and, you know, answered the call, and we built the first tank plant in America right here in Detroit and Warren, Michigan, and that still exists today. TARDEC, TACOM, the history of the Army Ground Vehicle Command, right there. Mm-hmm. We built what was in the time the third largest air research lab, Bomark, with Boeing. We produced, I mean, people don't realize this, but we produced all the timeshare computing platforms even that were used to compute bomb trajectories during the war. That history of military computing is actually as deep as anything that happened like in Europe, which, you know, everyone knows some of those stories, cracking the codes for, you know, the U-boats and all this stuff. But, you know, we built all this stuff out of Ypsilanti, Michigan, you know, Willow Run Labs. But we buried that history. People don't realize that we invented holography and small aperture Doppler radar, remote sensing, like, you know, mapping all, you know, all the surveillance stuff we do from space. And yeah, and during the anti-war movement, you know, what was Willow Run Labs became the Environmental Research Institute of Michigan, right? Because, you know, you certainly can be used for environmental research, and it is, but, you know, it was military and defense research that really led that. And there's a parallel there to Silicon Valley. Silicon Valley was also built with a secret history of defense engineering and research. And you know, my friend Steve Blank tells that story. But even people in the Valley don't know that. you know, that all that stuff came out of that. But, you know, the era of like, you know, continued through like the 70s, 80s of computer vision, of, you know, what was industrial automation, like, you know, MSDI. There was a company that went public in Ann Arbor that had invented CNC, you know, applying basically, you know, these timeshare computing and to shop floor robotics, right, and kinematics and manufacturing. But CNC was all built out of there, and there's a history there too that people don't realize. So we don't get credit.
Right. Now, when you look at all this history, it's one of innovation. It's one of grit and determination. I mean, it's also the uplifting of the middle class. My grandmother was a Rosie the Riveter figure during, you know, my growing up. She started out with her father in Poland, and she and her father came over, and he became a coal miner in Ohio. And then when she met my grandfather, they both said, you know, there's no future in coal mining here. And they headed with a $300 Model A to Detroit to work in the factories. And my grandmother ended up working an entire career in the factories. And when I asked her, you know, I said, during the war, you went to work as, you know, as Chrysler turned its attention to war production of military equipment. I said, but then you stayed on and worked another 30 years afterwards. And I said, you know, what made you decide to stay? And she said, you know, the work wasn't that hard. And that's sort of mind-boggling to me, that this woman was assembling cars and building cars and ironically never even learned to drive a car. But, you know, it was this sort of grit and determination to build their family and to provide for them and to build a home in Detroit and make a home here. So when I look at all these innovations you're talking about, Doug, it's a fascinating way to kind of frame where Michigan's been and where it's going. And you have a big stake in all that. And so I want to get back. I have a lot more questions for you. So we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back to episode 2. And I want to talk about all the things you're currently working on to lift Michigan up, because it's a substantial to-do list you have. So to our listening and viewing audience, you have been listening to the accidental entrepreneur Doug Song, co-founder of Duo Security, and now working with his foundation to make a huge difference in Detroit and in Michigan and across the region, using technology as a bridge to the future. So come back to us, stay with us, stay disrupted, and we'll be right back.